What's up, Mzanzi? Welcome to Farmers Inside Track, episode 386. I'm your host, Octavia Spandil. Now today we will delve into the primary considerations for designing grazing systems, exploring how these factors differ based on livestock type and grazing land characteristics. And in this episode, Dr. Gilbert Pole, researcher in the Range and Forage Sciences Unit of the Agricultural Research Council, specifically in animal production, shares his expertise on the appropriate stocking rate for a specific grazing area. Gilbert, welcome to Farmers Inside Track. I'm so excited to be able to have this conversation around grazing management, specifically in livestock. What are the primary factors to consider when designing a grazing system, and how do these differ based on the type of livestock and the characteristics of the grazing land?
I'm going to try and answer your question. Basically, what one would really have to consider is the cost associated with designing such a grazing system, and what would then be the return on investment for a farmer, you know, after such a system is sort of erected. The second thing would be to look at now, for whom are you sort of designing this grading system? Are you doing it for, you know, a cattle farmer or a game farmer, or even a small stock farmer that is being a goat or sheep farmer? So you would also understand that different production systems sort of require a unique set of tools, basically, to sort of manage them in terms of infrastructure. You know, the fences you may need, the water point you may need, the boating facility that you may need. And so the cost of doing that comes into place. You can imagine if you do it, for an example, you know, a grazing sort of management plan or system for a game. I mean, if you were to erect a fence for a game farm, obviously the costs are so high. I mean, it's about 20 to 25 times higher than if you were to erect a cattle fence on the same property. And other than, you know, production system, you would also have to look at what scale are you designing a grazing management plan for. You have farmers who are at a very small scale vis-a-vis farmers who are at extensive, you know, a commercial scale with, you know, a large head and often having multiple heads. So the cost of having or designing a grazing system for such are quite intense. So those are the things that we need to consider. But more importantly, you would like to consider, you know, the heterogeneity or the homogeneity of your vegetation and the landscape itself, because the more homogeneous, you know, the less problem you have, but the more heterogeneous your landscape in terms of different slope position, different aspects, soils and so on and so forth, you may need to have, you know, quite a number of camps to make sure that all your fell type units are separated from each other for management purpose. And that comes at a cost.
How do you determine the appropriate stocking rate for a specific grazing area, and what methods or tools are used to assess carrying capacity accurately?
There are a number of ways basically to determine the appropriate stocking rate, but I would want to start two most important ones. You could do that, you know, with animals on the farm or without animals on the farm. With animals on the farm, for example, you would have a farmer already running, you know, a head of cattle on a property. So what you may need to know there is how big is the farm, and of course, how many animals are on that farm. And then you convert firstly the animals into livestock units. And let's say you're getting, you know, 50 livestock units overall, and the farm is about 100 hectares. So all you need to do basically to work out first the carrying capacity, which is obviously 2 hectares per 1 livestock unit. But because you're looking at now the stocking rate, what you may need to do is really to do the inverse, which is basically because your carrying capacity is hectares per livestock unit, for you to determine stocking rate, your answer has to be in livestock unit per hectare. So the easiest would be to say you 1 divided by 2, which is basically 0.50 livestock unit per hectare. And that's how you basically work it out. It's always simpler for me to first determine the carrying capacity. Once I know how many hectares per one the livestock unit, then it's easier for me to work out the grazing capacity, the stocking rate, which is just a matter of changing from hectares per livestock unit, which is now your grazing capacity, to livestock unit per hectare, which becomes now your stocking rate. And then when you do the stocking rate determination now without animals on the farm, you firstly going to say how much land do I have, how big the area in terms of hectares, and how productive that piece of land is. Basically, the only way you know is when you have done field condition assessment and you know for sure that this is the field condition score. If you have used your ecological index methodologies, or this is your biomass production, which would be expressed in kilograms climate per hectare. This way you use now the agronomic approaches. And what you do now, you correlate your grazing capacity with now your annual, mean annual rainfall, which we have on a number of tables. They are available. One wants to have one online. They are also available on our third condition assessment template. You get one for the grassland and you also get one for the savannah. So it talks to the relationship between your field condition score and your annual rainfall, and where they meet, you get a field your grading capacity. And once you know a grading capacity, say for an example, we have 4 hectares per large stock limit, and you want to convert that into stocking rate, all you do is 1 divided by 4. 1 in this case is your last stock unit, 4 in this case becomes your hectare. And then you will have now 0.25 large stock unit per hectare. And this is now your stocking rate. And you would see that a 0.25 large stock unit is more equivalent of a sheep or a goat. And what it also means is that you can have now, in fact, you can have 4 goats on a piece of, or on a hectare on an annual basis. Coming to the methodologies for assessing grazing capacity, there are quite a number of methods that are used extensively in the country. And it depends on, your objective and where you're doing the assessment, because some methods are very good for for use in certain areas. For example, your Karoo, Nama Karoo, and your Sakaland Karoo. And some are very good when used in your grassland and savannas. And you still get differences in accuracy when you're doing assessment in the winter versus when doing it in the summer. And that's where you need to be very clear in terms of which methodology, a combination of methodologies that will give accurate answer in terms of creating capacity. So personally, I believe in combining your agronomic approach or agronomic methodologies with ecological methodologies so that you're very confident of the answer at the end of the day.
Can you explain the concept of grazing pressure and its significance in managing pasture health and productivity? How is grazing pressure calculated and adjusted in that practice?
Simply a demand-supply ratio between your dry matter requirement of your animals and the quantity of forage available in a pasture or grazing area at any specific time. And how one would calculate that, it's basically, there are many ways, obviously, to skin a cat. But in my, in my view, I would basically determine the demand and supply ratio on the basis, firstly, on the annual basis, firstly. And once I've determined it on annual basis, I would then know if I have a deficit or, access. And in that case, then if I have, for example, a deficit, then I'll reduce the period of stay any of the camps that I will develop in calculating this grazing pressure for, or doing some adjustment, practical adjustment for. But God, now deficit, it means I'm going to, I'm going to be able to keep animals for an extended period of time. But if I have access, then I much will reduce the time spent in any of the camps.
And what are the advantages and limitations of different grazing systems, such as continuous grazing, rotational grazing, and intensive grazing, in terms of forage utilization, animal performance, and environmental sustainability?
I personally believe that it doesn't matter which grazing system you're using. What matters most is, are you adhering to the correct stocking rate for that specific area? So basically, all these grazing systems are okay for me. It's only a matter of now, as I was saying, keeping the right stocking rate and carrying capacity for it, even if using any of these methodologic systems. But to answer your question, I think the continuous grazing system is you know, your classes and continual use of your grasses by animal without really allowing the, you know, the grasses to rest and recover from herbivory. And the disadvantages thereof is basically that you will have areas that more or sites that are more utilized, the expenses of the other, for example, areas around the water point or, you know, in villages, as you know, that the continuous grazing system is more a common practice in communities. It's one of those things that you would have with continuous grazing. But other than, you know, site selectivity or site preference, you will also have more certain species being utilized at the expenses of other, for example, your palatable species. And the animals are likely to perform well because, one, they are less stressed because they are not confined into camp. And the second one being that they are allowed to make their own food choices based on their physiological and obviously their nutritional requirement. When we look at now rotational grazing, it's basically a practice of containing and moving animals through pastures using camps or within paddocks in some instances. And this grazing system is basically extensive and sometimes require, of course, in most cases, require fencing or herders, as I was saying, and that fences sometimes are even more extensive than the land itself. The animals are bound to perform if all is really considered in terms of your correct stocking rate. They are bound to perform because then they are allowed to eat what they prefer, and before that diminishes, they are moved into another area. So the system is also very sustainable, provided nothing crashes, you know, everything continues as planned. And then the last system would be your intensively managed grazing system, the likes of high production grazing or high intensity grazing for short duration. And here, the idea is to increase forage quality, you know, increase your productivity per unit area, the uniform use of your rents, and so on and so forth. And here, the same is true. Animals are also bound to perform, and provided, again, everything else is standard, correct grazing capacity, correct stocking rate for a set period of time, and before animals are on. And the problem here is that this might require more skilled people because then you need to be monitoring whether your herd is really improving or increasing in quality.
How do you assess pasture conditions and monitor changes in vegetation composition over time? And what indicators are used to determine when adjustments to grazing management are necessary?
One of the things that I will do is basically, as I was saying earlier, is to know where the area is. Is it in the savannas or is it in the thickets or in the Namakaru? Once I know, that's where the choice of a methodology comes in. But as I mentioned earlier, I believe in combining both agronomic and ecological method for the reason being that each of these methods has limitations and also advantages. For example, it's easier to measure certain parameters which, you know, cover abundance or agronomic approach methodologies as opposed to all the ecological index methodologies. And the same is true with some parameters that you would find easy to measure and more accurately with the ecological as opposed to agronomic approach methodologies. In terms of now indicators to determine when to adjust grazing management, I think the most important one is your plant cover. It's important to know whether you're not decreasing or increasing. If it's decreasing, then there's a problem. But if it's increasing, it's a good thing, obviously. Your plant species dominant, you would want species to move from unpalatable to palatable and not the other way around, where they move from palatable to unpalatable. And when you start seeing, you know, more of the unpalatable plant species coming, then you see, you know, you're going to have a problem. And the same is true when you look at now your mean annual rainfall amount and distribution. Once you start experiencing below average rainfall and erratic, you know, occurrence of size, then you know you may need to adjust certain things on your farm. But once it's more in a positive side, it might mean keep on doing what you're doing. I can too agree.
What are some effective strategies for controlling invasive plant species and improving the biodiversity of grazing lands while maintaining livestock productivity?
There are a few things to consider, even, you know, at the beginning. First, that species are different, and so would be the, you know, their reproductive control measures. And the second to consider is that it's better to integrate or combine control measures than to rely on a single control measure. And the third thing to consider as well is that all control measures require a follow-up in some instances of up to 6 years before you can realize, you know, a complete control of an alien or invasion plant. But we also know that there are cost and, you know, benefits sort of analysis that has to be in place. And when you look at now the use of chemical and mechanical, you know, they always very effective, but not economic and ecological. And so one has to really consider that, among other things, when we control this program plan or investment plan. And there's also potential for biocontrol agents, but unfortunately with South Africa, we don't have enough registered bioagents, you know, to control some of the encroaching or invasive species that we find ourselves in South Africa. And the best option is to use fire as an ecological control measure. But again, the problem there is with, you know, your fuel load. And sometimes you need a certain amount of fuel load for it to be effective in controlling the plant. But because this plant produces, you know, allelopathy, you tend not to have anything growing underneath the canopy. And as a result, fire becomes a challenge. And then even if you have a good fuel load, one of the things that you look to look out for is now, you know, are you having a very good plan post-fire, you know, to manage the area post-fire? In some instances, you may need to also, you know, combine fire with browsers. For an example, if a plant can be, you know, eaten by animals, or if it doesn't, you know, if it's not eaten by animals, you can also, you know, follow up, have, you know, your foliar spray, and using chemicals as a follow-up. But I've seen, you know, very innovative farmers when they realize the chemicals and the chemical and are not helping them, you know, they, you know, tap into trying to cut these invasive alien trees to create charcoal, firewood, and in some instances, even extracting medicinal compound and or formulating food for their animals, you know, in cases the plant, have nutritional compound.
Gilbert, just a quick one from me. How do weather patterns, seasonal changes, and climate variability influence grazing management decisions, particularly in regions with distinct wet and dry seasons?
What would happen is because now you have erratic rainfall, one of the things that you will struggle with, especially, you know, your sweetness or your sourness of your field, you'd have certain areas in the farm that are more sweet than others. And as a result, you may need to make decisions such as when or where do I graze during winter and where do I graze during summer. For example, utilize the sweet field during the winter and the sour field during the summer. And the reason being that, you know, your sour field tend to lose palatability over time, and, you know, you want to use it in summer because you want to keep it growing and palatable, acceptable to your animal. But what of the things that would also change or be influenced by this erratic, you know, weather pattern or climatic condition is the frequency at which you would want your elk, you know, to would rotate your animals in camps or in grazing land. It would increase, the frequency would be higher with areas that are sour as compared to areas that are more sheeter. But also very important, when you have this erratic rainfall, the chances I am experience below average rainfall, sort of which will then influence your fodder producing capabilities of the farm. Thus, you know, suggesting that you need to start contributing, be conservative in your stocking rate, you know, as and when you experience below average rainfall. Thank you for that as well.
And what are the key principles of effective rest and recovery periods for grazed pastures? And how do you determine the appropriate duration of rest between grazing events?
Okay, first, resting has to be during the growing season for grass to recover. Because if you do it during the winter season, anyway, the grass will not recover. So that's point number one. And how do you determine the appropriate duration for resting? you need to make sure that your plant has recovered fully, meaning it has really completed all its growth stages, and the last one being the production of seeds, before you can really bring animal. And once you have seen grass recovered to that point, then you can put the animals in. And the period of now, how long they will stay, would be determined by how much they utilize. And, you know, the principle or the rule of thumb is that during above average rainfall, you can utilize up to 75%. But during time of below average rainfall, you can utilize up to 65% of what is available on the farm.
How do grazing management practices impact soil health and nutrient cycling in grazing lands, and what techniques are used to promote soil fertility and minimize erosion?
When urinating and normally dropping the air down, basically they sort of recycle nutrients, and in this case we're talking nitrogen, phosphorus and potassium, among other nutrients, back into the soil. And the best grazing management practice, you know, really to encourage such is, you know, the use of adaptive multi-paddock grazing system, which basically employ high density short duration grazing, followed by a long adaptive varied post grazing plant recovery period. And this is so that you can increase your soil carbon nutrient cycling, your microbial function, above ground biodiversity, and many more. Basically, and ultimately the range profitability or the profitability of the farm.
And finally, can you discuss the economic aspects of grazing management, including cost-effective strategies for maximizing livestock productivity, optimizing forage utilization, and minimizing input costs?
The first thing to bear in mind is where your farm. Are you more in the sweet field or in the sour field or in the mixed? But the reason I'm putting this up front, because if you are in the sweet field, you're guaranteed that your animal will have sufficient feed for at least 7 to 9 months, which could be equated to about 75 to 85% of feed for your animal from the range itself, no supplementation, nothing else. And in contrast, when you are in the sour field, you are guaranteed about 5 to 7 months of feed, which is about 55% of, you know, feed for your from the rents, and then no supplements.
Thanks so much, Dr. Gilbert Poulet, researcher in the Range and Forage Science Unit of the Agricultural Research Council, specifically in animal production. But for more on the topic, visit www.foodformzanzi.co.za. And that's a wrap. Remember to subscribe to our podcast on your favorite platform. From me, Octavius Pandil, our technical producer, Megan van der Vriend, and the rest of the hashtag Team Food from Zanzi. Thanks for listening.
Life in South Africa can be a lot. I mean, scroll through Twitter for a minute and tell me I'm wrong. Thank God for South Africans though, right? We're inspiring, and even on the bad days, we fight back with a smile. That's why I love Food from Zanzi so much. They're not ashamed to celebrate the ordinary unsung heroes who work every day to put food on our nation's tables. Go to foodformzanzi.co.za and never miss an inspiring story.